When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, guys? Welcome to The Sesh. Today, I got a special guest. Please introduce yourself and tell everybody what you do.
Hi, everyone. I am Fabiola Urgel Caporuso. I'm a commercial lender at Vantage Bank Texas.
So I'm super interested in the investment space. I for some reason, went towards the cryptocurrency and Bitcoin area, but I find myself always coming back to real estate and commercial. And a lot of the people I've been chatting with lately have a ton of investments in real estate and in commercial real estate like that. So I kind of wanted to pick your brain and find out how I can get into the space as well. So let everybody know what you do professionally.
Yes. So I'm a commercial lender, but what I was telling Josh is that I manage portfolios. So not only your loans, but your relationship as a whole. And that's what we specialize at the financial institution I work for.
Okay. And what's your background?
I studied economics and communication studies.
Okay.
So for some time, I wanted to be in the TV industry.
is that gone now?
That is very long gone. But I also always had a passion for economics, more on the macro level.
Okay.
But also the micro level, and not to toot my own horn, but when I was in high school, the last year of your high school in Mexico, they divide you into areas of interest, and I was in what they call economic administrative. And I was killing my economics exam. So I was like, well, I think I'm naturally good.
It's easy for you.
I would not say easy, but I would not struggle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always experienced the opposite because I always have to like study really hard and I have to be really into it.
Yes.
Otherwise, it just goes out my brain. Like recently, I've been doing some studies at UTRGV with they have an emerging technologies course.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty interesting because it's about AI, blockchain, and wow. It's very interesting to see the world that's coming, like, from 20. So last year is the first time that OpenAI released ChatGPT.
Yes.
I got it in January 23rd, and it's only been a year, but, like, the progress that AI has made. Like, do you find that scary or exciting? Because I find it exciting.
I think it's exciting. For full disclosure, I haven't used ChatGPT. I'm probably the only person that...
A lot, trust me.
Yes, I haven't. But everyone that have used... All my friends have used it and they swear by it. They say it cuts your time, especially when you're having writer's block, that mm-hmm. it cuts it by...
Yeah, the productivity, yeah.
Yes, but I've always been, I would not say afraid... But I like writing.
Right.
So that's my thing.
That's come easy to you. See, I've always had the problem where I can't get what's in my head on paper.
Yes.
Eloquently, I should say, right? Because
yes,
it comes out like all jumbled up and
yes.
all that stuff. So
the finesse.
The finesse. I don't have that. ChatGPT helps me. A lot of people yes. say that it's cheating and stuff, but I feel like it's a tool. As with anything, like
yeah.
a phone is a tool, a typewriter is a tool.
Calculators.
A yes, exactly.
Back in the day, they were seen as cheating.
What do you think about that? Do you think it's cheating or do you think it's a tool? What are your thoughts on ChatGPT?
I think it's a tool, but there's a fine line between having it do your work mm-hmm. and hindering the learning process.
Right.
So I'm all about tools and things that add on to the learning experience.
Yeah.
But not that hinder or diminishes the learning. So it'd be good to do a study and see, but that would take over the years.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because I found like when I would jump into ChatGPT, I would be in it for like 2 or 3 hours a day. And single day I would use it. And it got to a point where it told me to like stop, go outside, take a breath. This is the AI telling me that.
Wow.
So it got to that point and I was like, well, whatever, I'm still going to use it. So I got to the point, and the great thing about it is it helps me learn fast, but I've known that when I learn fast, I lose a lot of the subject matter, so it doesn't stay in here. So I kind of have to slow my way of learning with mm-hmm. ChatGPT because yeah. you can get immersive in it, and it's kind of scary sometimes because like it has so much information.
Yeah. And it's a black hole.
Yeah, it's a black hole. It's very interesting. But so what motivated you for economics? Like that's a kind of a different subject that people are interested in. Like what made you gravitate towards economics?
Well, economics is a social science of choices.
Okay.
And I always find choices in general very interesting. And I always felt that life is a series of non-binary choices. Where it's as simple as doing this or doing this for the most part. So there's this this topic called game theory. I don't know if you watched the movie A Beautiful Mind.
I haven't seen it, but I know about game theory.
Yes. So basically, what it tells you is helps you understand why people choose A over B, or how people make choices. And I love that. So economics on a macro level helps you to understand, on the micro level helps you understand that. And also, I've always been a sucker for geopolitical topics and how the different political systems work in different countries. So when I was 10, my favorite thing to watch was political shows in Mexico and understand why Spain worked different than Mexico, why Great Britain still has a monarchy yet they have parliament. I've always been a nerd.
Yeah.
So economics helped me understand that. And then I was, at some point, actually, I thought I wanted a PhD in economics. And then I was like, no, I cannot sit still for 8 hours. And that's at least what you need to sit still for.
Yeah. I find it interesting that the, I didn't really care about all that stuff, like the macroeconomics and microeconomics, until I started to get into Bitcoin and see how it all affects everything.
It's
very interesting. What's the economic impact that's going on right here in America? Like, what do you see going on in America that, because I found that America is the leader. It's the main person that everybody looks towards. So if America does it, then most likely other countries are going to do it as well. Can you kind of touch on that?
In Mexico, there's a saying, and I'll say it in Spanish and in English, cuando Estados Unidos le da gripa, a México le da neumonía. So if the U.S. has a cold, Mexico gets pneumonia because, like you said, we all look, in the world, they look at the United States because, I mean, for obvious reasons, right? And then that dictates how currency, for example, peso versus dollar, euro versus dollar, the pound versus dollars. So, but in general, a way you can affect a currency, there's different ways, but one of them is how other countries view the political stability of it. So, of course, the more stable a country looks and they have its own currency, everything else held constant, the currency should be strong. If there's perceived turmoil or political conflict, again, all things held constant,
right,
its value or the currency, the value of the currency will be affected.
Yeah. Well, even in that, like in an election year, everything's completely different too, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that
volatile. The market is volatile.
It's interesting because I've been following the whole thing, and it's like tech stocks are like at the all time high, and then like the SP 500 is like it's kind of like it's underperforming. But I found that like a lot of people are going more towards the space of like tech and more digital currencies, because like the currencies right now are like they're valued so high. There's so much liquidity, like in Bitcoin, for example, right? Like it's a $858 billion. It's a coin, like that's crazy. The liquidity of it is kind of fascinating. Can you kind of touch on the differences between, because I've been fascinated with real estate and Bitcoin as real, like as an asset, right? Kind of similar to real estate. Can you kind of touch on that?
Yes. So, and I'm not an expert on Bitcoin. Actually, like I told you before, I think the most I've invested on Bitcoin is $100.
Yeah. But I want to get your input from like the real estate and
from
how
the
you
real
see
estate.
It. Yeah.
Yes. So even before I studied economics, one thing that I was always told since I was in high school, what's the one thing or one of the few things you cannot make more of? Land. There's up until the point that we discover how to build in Mars or other planet, then that's why it's such a safe investment, real estate. Because also it's there and it tends, again, all things called constant. That's one term that you learn in economics, ceteris paribus, all things held constant. You should appreciate in theory in value. Your home each year should, or for the most part, tends to value more and more each year. That's why people feel so confident investing in real estate. I don't know if you noticed this, but in 2020 and 2021, everyone and their cousins started becoming builders,
yeah.
buying. And that's great. But like I always tell people, there's so many things that can go wrong, especially with real estate investment, that we don't know about until you have to face the problem.
So let's dive into that. What are those problems?
Well, it can be as simple as, let's say you buy a piece of land and you say, I'm going to build an apartment complex here. But then after you buy the piece of land, you discover that there is not a power line or sewage or a water line. Well, I've seen cases where bringing any utility to a piece of land can run into the $200,000 to $250,000.
Wow.
Then you have to have your permits. Well, permits, city permits and construction permits or any kinds of permits take a long time. And you need to know what kind of permits you need. And that's those are the problems. And let's say that you got a loan with the bank. And usually what we do is for construction, we have an interest-only period. But after that, you're responsible for your P&I payments, principal and interest. And if you're not very well versed, you can easily run over your interest-only period and you have to pay your P&I payments.
I got you. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying. So there's a learning curve that you have to...
There is a learning curve.
So somebody can't go into like, hey, I want to buy this shopping plaza. Because that was my next question. How can I borrow money from you to open a shopping plaza?
Yes. I mean, I'm not trying to say that you cannot absolutely just wake up one day. I'm just saying that it's important to learn the potential problems that can happen and that you're preparing, that you have reserves, and that maybe it may not be the best idea to use all of your savings and have no backup and buy a strip mall when you haven't thought about reserves, things that can go wrong. You know, even if you have a strip mall, there's after certain years you have to repair some things.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things that you need to take into consideration before waking up one day and deciding, I want to jump into real estate liability. Again, I'm not trying to discourage anyone, but like I tell people that have come to me and say, I want to build a house. I'm like, okay, just understand the risks. There's always risk, especially right now where we are on a high, and I say this because I know people would tell me, well, in the 80s, on a high interest rate environment.
Yeah.
So.
And do you find that, like, somebody was telling me the other day that when the interest rates come down, the prices just go up. So it's just reverse. Is there any validity to that?
Yes and no, not necessarily. It depends.
Okay,
so,
explain.
Yes. So, for example, what some of us are expecting is that interest rates drop starting this year until next year. Can I say 100% if interest rates drop, prices are going to go up? No. Interest rates are a monetary tool used by the Federal Reserve Bank to control inflation and unemployment. But again, like I mentioned, the way our economy works is so complex that it's really hard to predict what can happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 2020, honestly, I was expecting a worse economic scenario. You know, I thought everyone was going, and I feel that was the initial thought of a lot of people. And it was one of my busiest years for loans, 2020 and 2021.
Hmm. What do you attribute that to?
Stimulus money, that would be one of it. Also, the PPP loans that the government subsidized, that was a huge push. Interest rates were low. People were getting all this money put into our economic system, and people used it.
Do you think it's going to come back again this year? Because it's an election year. We're going to get stimulated. The economy is going to get stimulated again. Do you feel like you're going to have another busy year with the investments and loans and all that stuff?
So there's two parts to that question. Do I think that they're going to have another round of stimulus checks and at the level they did the first time? I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. But again, I don't work for the government.
Right.
So, and I read the news, but
you do think about it a little bit more than the average person.
I have to.
Yeah.
By instinct, but also I've been trained to do that.
Yeah.
So is it a possibility? Yes. Do I think it's going to be at the level of 2020? No, because also 2020 was the years of the unknown. There were so many unknowns. I think fear can be a huge motivator. We were facing something that we didn't know how was going to react. We were facing the possibility of closing down a whole, I mean, some countries actually locked down. So I think that's the biggest difference right now. So, and also I don't want to think that's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, as always, you always want to think the best that's going to happen going forward.
Because, but prepare for the worst.
Prepare for the worst, right? And I think most people aren't prepared for the worst, like at all.
No, I don't think so.
It's kind of touching that because I feel like for me, I never got into real estate because I never understood it. And I always had that fear is like, what if I put my money in here
and it
doesn't work out? I think that's fear with any investment, right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely any investment. When I walk in here, I think I mentioned that I have a financial planner because I don't, in all honesty, I don't 100% understand the stock market. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the patience to every day check how my stocks are doing and how I don't.
Yeah.
That's why I don't do my own investing.
Well, what's interesting about that is, and this is where I kind of like, because I was talking to my dad, and my dad's relatively well off, right? He owns a business, and he's been investing in the stock market forever. And he told me the other day, is like, all of his stocks just are gone. And he's had a financial advisor for the past 40 years. And he did the same thing. He's like, I don't have time to be checking this. I just literally do not have time. So I was like, we kind of have to be the person to manage your financial parts. It's like, it's kind of scary because you're trying to run a job, you're trying to work, you're doing all this stuff, you have a family. And then also on top of that, you got to do your finances and all this other stuff. So it's like, it's an interesting take that I learned. It's like the lesson I learned from my dad was like, you literally have to watch your money, every single penny of it, where it's going, what it's doing, and all this, especially in the financial market.
Absolutely. And what I said, that when I said that I have someone manage my money, I don't mean that I completely never check how my investments are doing.
For sure, yeah.
And we have quarterly meetings, and so far it's been really good.
Yeah.
So I don't have any complaints right now. No, but it is very true. Also, it's important to know yourself and your risk.
Yeah.
Your risk for your appetite for risk.
What's your risk tolerance?
Surprisingly, very low.
Wow. Okay.
For my money.
Right.
For everything else. We had to take a test when we hired the person that manages our money, and it was moderate.
Okay. What would you rank me on? I have a business, a cash flow business. I stuff everything that I don't need after bills are paid into Bitcoin. You think that's a high tolerance, low tolerance?
That's extremely
crazy.
That's extremely high tolerance.
Why do you think that? Because I feel within the Bitcoin space, the cryptocurrency space, it is the most conservative bet.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
I mean, again, I don't fully understand it, but just based on regulations, as far as I know, it is not really regulated or backed up. For instance, banks, at least banks are insured by the FDIC, so up to $250,000. You know, if whatever happens, at least you got that. And then actually there's products that some banks have access to, that some banks offer, where there's a way to secure all of your money using FDIC insurance.
Okay.
So that's the only reason. And because I've heard people that went into Bitcoin, Dogecoin, I think.
Dogecoin, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they lost
everything.
Thousands.
Yeah.
And high thousands. I'm not talking like 1, 2, 3, 5.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing because there's so many cryptocurrencies out there. It's like I went through the whole bear market and I was just seeing my portfolio like at negative. I was like, ooh, it's like, ugh, it's bad. But anyways, I stayed in the course and I just kept going. And then I dollar costed average, right? I happened to be lucky because I invested every single week for the past like 3 years.
Yeah.
And I look back at my portfolio, I was like, oh, this is like significantly up. This is cool.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like a cycle of how it always works. But let's talk about the Border Economic Development and Entrepreneurship Symposium.
Oh,
I'm interested in that. Let's chat about that. What is that about?
Yes. Well, I don't think they do it anymore. But back when I was in college, it would be these two-day event where we will bring in experts from the Federal Reserve Bank, from some banks in Mexico. I think we brought at some, 1 year someone from Banorte. We will bring people from the Pew Research Center, Mark Hugo Lopez, and they will talk about the economy in the border. They will talk about the economy in Texas. And the border is such a unique, a unique place with unique dynamics, economic dynamics and social dynamics. So we will talk, I was not an expert. they would talk about how the area, how the state, how the country was performing and compare. And also, like I mentioned, we were bringing experts from Mexico and they will talk about it. And then we will bring from the Federal Reserve Bank experts talk about monetary policy, economic policy. So it was very interesting. It was a very knowledgeable event that was. And the greatest part of it is that it was inclusive of everyone from students to policymakers to business owners. So it was an open invitation.
Okay. Let's stay on that subject about the border. I think the Rio Grande Valley is a special place. Like, I don't think people really get like how awesome the valley is. And,
yes.
And I always have this problem because I do a lot of social media, right? Mm-hmm. And somebody's always saying like, don't focus on the valley. Like nobody cares. I was like, I'm from the Valley. Like, I grew up here. I want to give back to Valley. Like, this is where I grew up. I know people here. I have family here. Why wouldn't I like support the Rio Grande Valley? Like, that's part of me.
Yes.
And it always bothers me when people say, I was like, forget the Valley. Like, go somewhere else. And I was like, I don't want to go anywhere else. Like, I enjoy the Valley. Mm-hmm. I want to lay my roots here and I want to be able to make it prosperous, right? Let's talk about that border. That's how special the Rio Grande Valley is, since it is what, 1.2 million people here, 1.3?
I think so.
And then 1.4 million people travel every year back and forth. Do you see on your end as far as like from where you are with the bank? What do you see like that relationship being?
Yes. I have a lot of customers, domestic customers, and also I have a lot of international customers, mainly from Mexico.
What would you say the percentages?
I think it's fairly even.
Okay.
Yeah, fairly even, maybe a 60-40.
Wow. 60 being international?
Domestic. Domestic, okay. And 40 being international.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. I think it's very unique because I think it's this border, but like you mentioned, yeah, we do have, and I see it, maybe, I think it's improving a little bit, but the brain, what they call it, brain drainage?
Brain drainage? Explain brain drainage. That.
Well, that for instance, one time I had this conversation with a CPA, and he said, yeah, your top accounting graduates from UTRGV, they're gone. They're going to go to the big fours. Hmm. So then you're losing those top talents because they think that to make it, you have to leave.
Right.
You have to leave the valley. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that. I think we are moving towards the right direction. I think there's a lot of investment. I think there's a lot of great things that are happening here that are helping with that. We are growing, we're developing. There's more opportunities, more access to certain things. Yeah. So what is unique also about the Valley that you have and is that, like you mentioned, you have people that come and incentivize our economy from other places and from other countries. And that helps significantly our restauranteurs, our hoteliers, retailers. So that helps. And it's such a unique area because of that. And also because of what you said, the sense of community that we have in the Valley is phenomenal.
Yeah.
People want to give back. People that are strong in the community, they're always looking for ways to give back.
Yeah.
And I know this because I'm on several
boards.
So yeah.
Let's chat about that because I feel that there aren't a lot of good leaders and a lot of good mentors out there. I don't know if it's just because I'm not seeing them. What do you see on your end?
I've been very blessed to have extremely generous and knowledgeable mentors. A little bit about me is that I moved here when I was 18 and I didn't know one single soul. And I moved to start college at UTPA, now UTRGV. And there I had mentors that helped me you know, be successful as a student that helped me land or at least open the door for me. Like I mentioned, that when I work at the Federal Reserve Bank, then there I had a mentor who opened more doors. And then that's how I ended up in Vantage Bank. And then in Vantage Bank, I've had really good mentors and bosses that I know genuinely want me to succeed, and they support me, and I never fear that I'm going to make a mistake. I mean, there's certain mistakes that you shouldn't make, right? But every day I know my job is a learning opportunity, and that's what my mentors at the bank have taught me.
Okay, let's stay on that subject, because that's not common, like, knowledge, right? I feel like most people aren't going to get up and do the things that they need to do regardless of how they feel.
Yes.
That's my opinion, obviously, right? What is it about, why do you have that? Like, what is ingrained in you that you have that?
I think that adversity is a great teacher and a very great lesson in humility and understanding that nothing is too deep and you're not all that. You can have 30, 40, 50 years of experience. My mentor at the Federal Reserve Bank, Jordana, who's now a really good friend of mine, told me, I never take myself serious. I take what I do very serious, but never myself. Mm-hmm. This is someone that graduated from Harvard.
Wow.
And I really took that upon me. So I never take myself serious, but I take what I do very, very serious. Yeah. And with that comes the understanding that you're not perfect, that no one is, that like when I began my career, I was, and I still feel I'm the very steep portion of the learning curve. So it's just making peace with the fact that every day you're going to learn something new and that you shouldn't be the smartest person in the room because maybe you're in the wrong room.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what I feel.
Yeah. Well, I feel like a lot of people won't do the necessary work on themselves. Like they'll for years, I sat on a couch, like for 4 years, actually. And I was just listening to like motivation over and over. And then I was like, shit, I got to actually do something.
Yeah, no, the books. Absolutely.
It was a hard pill to swallow. I was like, oh, shit, this, like, I'm not going to become like successful by sitting here.
And by reading. No.
Yeah, so kind of talk about that, because I am a huge proponent for like continuous education, like always learning something, get certified in something. And I think a lot of people don't take that seriously. Can you kind of touch on that?
Yes. And I laugh because I tell everyone that my MBA was an impulse purchase. So it was December of 2021. And no, it was January, actually. It was January of 2022. And I found out I was pregnant.
Wow.
And I knew from the get-go I was going to have a girl. So I said, I need to have an MBA. I couldn't do it before because I was here on a student visa and then a work visa that did not allow for me to study. So I always promised myself that the second I had my green card, I was going to get a master's. So then all that happened together the same month. I found out I was pregnant and then I got my green card. And then I said, I need to show with my example to my daughter that she has to continually learn, no matter how comfortable you are and no matter how much you make or how much you think you've made it. So I'm a huge proponent of, and then for the past, I just graduated in December, this December.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. With my MBA with specialization in healthcare management. Because I was like, okay, I also need to learn something that I don't already know. Because the easy thing would have been to go into finance or something that I knew like the back of my hand. And then, but then I said, okay, what's the fun in that? How am I challenging myself?
Why do you think that way?
Because I've always been an eager learner. And also because, like I mentioned, I've had so many challenges in my life and so many obstacles when I was in college. I had 3 jobs. One of the things that I shared recently, and just because I feel that with social media, we only see the beautiful, the filter, the look at my walking closet, which is, there's nothing wrong,
right?
But we rarely allow ourselves to show the ugly, the rejections, the no's, the things that do not work out. And I would not say the failures, but the lessons learned that we learn in life. So because of that, and because I didn't always have access to everything that I do now, I see my current privilege as an opportunity and one that I take very serious and a responsibility. Yeah. So what are you doing with your platform? What are you doing with your privilege? Yeah. So that's why, and age, man, it makes you very humble. Life has weird ways to humble. Yes, to humble yourself and to show you what's important. And one of the things that George, one of my mentors at the bank, tells me is education is something that they can never take away from you. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing. What's in here and here, they cannot take away from
your
you.
Your skills. Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I turned 42, 43. I literally stopped counting
right,
after 40.
Like, I know I'm not 45.
I'm not 45. Yeah. But I found out that like fitness, exercise, food, feeding my brain, mm-hmm. feeding my body, like I want the body that's going to carry me into my 90s.
Because exactly.
If I find out that my grandpa's 93, right?
Yeah.
So if I get to live that long, I want to be able to be moving around and use the restroom by myself.
Exactly.
You know, like those little things I don't think people really think about, like when they're, because I used to be obese. Like I used to weigh 250 pounds. I got down to 186. Now I'm at 200. I'm at a manageable weight that I enjoy, right? But I stay active and I hate it. I don't like doing it. I tell my trainer all the time, it's like, I don't like coming here. I'm smiling all the time, I'm having fun here, but I don't like lifting heavy weights. And he's just like, yeah, whatever. But I don't think people really understand that. I really don't like working out. I'm only doing it because I enjoy the body that I have.
Of course.
I feel more like able-bodied, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you go out into the world, you want to feel able-bodied.
Yeah.
And I feel like most people lack that. Do you see that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm one of those people.
But you went on a fitness journey, right?
Yes. Well, I've been consistently working out since 2018.
Do you like it?
No.
Okay, awesome. High five right there.
High five. No, I'm not going to say whoever says they like it, they're lying.
There's some people that enjoy
stuff. They are. But I'm very disciplined. And the way I see it is, like you said, I don't do it to look a certain way, but to feel a certain way and to be able to play with my daughter, to be able to get up the stairs. I'm like, what if there's not an elevator? You know, I think all of those things. And also, because I see the rise on heart disease and diabetes and obesity.
Especially here in the Rio Grande Valley.
Especially in the Rio Grande Valley. So I do it for those reasons. Mm. But absolutely, for me, it's discipline. I'm a very disciplined person.
Where did you get that from?
I think myself.
Okay.
But also my dad has always been a very hard worker. And one of the things that my dad, and I live by this, and sometimes I hate myself for this, is that he would always tell me, so my dad would always tell me, do the right thing, no matter how hard it is. So to this day, even days that I have to make those difficult phone calls, I'm like, okay, if deep down I know in my heart that I'm doing the right thing, I can make peace with myself, whatever the outcome is.
Yeah.
Whatever the outcome is, I know I'm doing the right thing. And my dad and my mom, since I was like 12 or 11, one day she sat me down and she was like, Fabi, there's not good and bad fates or destinies. There's good and bad decisions. You don't necessarily wake up one day in a bad spot. It's a sum of bad decisions and poor choices. And that's...
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, okay.
The more good decisions you make over time,
the more likely.
The better you
have. I mean, there's certain things that can happen, right? But the other day I was actually having this conversation with my mom and I was like, I feel at peace. And I think that's the new wealth, the new.
Yeah, because
I feel at peace.
Yeah, the world is so fast and there's so much going on in the world. It's like, if you can control, and this is, some people have a problem with when I say control your feelings, because a lot of people, I feel they can't.
Yeah.
And I only barely understood how to control my feelings. And sometimes my wife was like, you lack empathy. I was like, I don't think I lack empathy. I mean, I feel empathetic, but I'm able to move past the decision like right then and there. Like mm-hmm. I get like
the emotion
of it. Like, cause I get like in business, like you're mm-hmm. going to get punched in the face some days and then some days are going to be awesome.
Yeah.
But like, you still have to get up and do what you got to do regardless. So I feel like I don't think it's so much a lack of empathy Maybe.
No.
I don't know.
I don't know.
What do you all think? How about that? So, but I feel like you still have to get up regardless and do the things that you need to do, because at the end of the day, you still have bills. You still have to pick up your kids at school. You still have to do all the things that you need to do. So those are my thoughts. Sorry, I went off track. Let's talk about your, you wrote a paper that is pretty interesting. It's the effect of disability income on retirement decisions and wealth, right?
And wealth, yes.
So I found out that I believe by the number of Americans ages 65 and older is projected to increase by 58 million. Well, it's 58 million right now, and it's projected to go up to 82 million by 2050. Like, can you kind of touch on the rate, the aging demographic in America, and then how your paper like goes into that?
Yes. Wow. I wrote this a lot when I was smarter, or at least more into research, when I had more time to analyze data. But no, basically what my paper says, unsurprisingly, at least to me and when I talk to people, is that disability does play an impact on wealth and on the decisions you make towards your retirement, but that's also affected because of salaries, employability, and other factors. You talk about the aging population, and I think one of the things we're all very aware is that, like you mentioned, we're an America, the United States of America, it's an aging population, and we're going to see a lot of people going into retirement. So that's one big thing, you know, Social Security. But basically my paper was written at a point when I would see, or I wanted to understand, the specifics of how disability impacted the access to building wealth.
Okay.
Because it's despair. There's a disparity there. People with disabilities, and there's a range, I mean, of humongous range of disabilities. And then there's disabilities that are not precisely seen or visible. Yeah. But yeah, that's in a nutshell what my study was about.
And what was like one of the most compelling things that you learned from that?
That I think it was almost, I can't remember the specific figure, but I think it was almost by half the difference between retirement income of a person with disability compared with its counterpart.
Wow, that's pretty significant.
I think it was like 40 something, 43.
Well, there's a huge portion of the Rio Grande Valley that's in poverty. Like, are you aware of that?
Oh, absolutely. We live in the poorest area in America. I think when I was in college, one of my mentors, Dr. Davila, was doing this study on this. The poorest area in the country that year, and I think it was a colonia called El Muñiz, mm-hmm. or if I remember correctly, and you see the poverty, and you see the need, you see the colonias down here. When I was in the Fed, I helped with a study about the colonias across the U.S. border and about the digital divide and how something that you don't even, that most of us take for granted, makes an impact, like access to internet.
Yeah, it's crazy.
In learning, and how that impacts learning, and then how learning impacts other areas, and so on and so on. It's so systematic and deeply rooted in like a cycle. Not like, it's a cycle, yeah. That it's hard to break.
I heard that by 2030, that all of America will be connected to the internet. So the digital divide should be gone. I saw that there's two companies investing heavily in the internet infrastructure here in Hidalgo County specifically. So that like shows you like where we're going in like a digital world, right? What do you see on your end as far as that, like the digital parts?
Well, banking is one of the first industries that was impacted by going digital, or at least a huge portion. I mean, your cell phone can now deposit a check.
Yeah. How awesome is that?
Yes. I mean, I think 20 years ago, this was not even something, a possibility. You can send a wire transfer. You can even do payroll sometimes on your phone. There's so many apps that help you to accomplish so many things when it comes to banking and accounting. So definitely I see it day in, day out. But also with that comes great risks. Cyber attacks are on the rise. We have trainings almost every single day. Shout out to our cybersecurity team. And they test us and see if we understand, because we see the rise in attempts and how good the hackers are getting at pretending they are somewhere or phishing emails or pretending they're someone they're not. So,
wow. Interesting.
It comes with a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, I've been one of those impulse purchases, like for your MBA is one of my cyber things. I want to get into cybersecurity and I bought a course impulsively. Yeah, well, it's interesting because I see that that's where everything is going. Like the digital world's like, I feel like most people need to up their skills, especially like for me, like in social media, I'm doing marketing and advertising. I got that down. But I want to dive into AI and blockchain and like cybersecurity. Is it going to be something that I feel like we're barely at the beginning of where it's going to go? So I'll always have opportunity. That's what I think most people need to take advantage of, is opportunities. And you got to be prepared for them.
Like, yes.
There's no better way than to start learning and getting certified. And
growing with it.
Yeah, growing with
it. It's easier than learning later.
Yes,
that's absolutely why technology comes so easy to... Or easier to Gen Zers, and because they grew up with it.
Yeah, they grew up with it. And that's part of the digital divide.
Yeah.
Let's chat about the commercial real estate. Let's go back to the commercial real estate in the Valley. As far as like the economic stuff that's going on in the world right now, how does it affect the Rio Grande Valley commercial space?
The world, like development in the world?
Yeah.
Well, we live in a globalized community. Of course, the more, let's say something simple, the more a franchise of a certain real estate business or a property goes up, the more we are going to potentially be tempted to bring it here. And we see it. I think there is no secret about what is being built in North McAllen. Your guest last week or this week is, you know, it's one of our main developers here in the here in the Valley. And you see how that kind of spaces, you know, the open concept with shops and dining and bars is becoming so popular that now we have the Pearl in San Antonio Domain. I think it's in Austin. Now we're going to have something similar here in McAllen. So I think that if the right people are exposed to the right things, they can be easily replicated, or we see being replicated in places. And then we have, as a community, we see more. And one of the things that my parents always told me is that you need to see more than your four walls, right, like your house. So the more you're exposed to things, the more things you're going to be or to learn and develop skills. Now this is real estate. We have way more restaurants now of different variety. I think when I moved to the Valley, there were like,
yeah, there's tons.
There's two good restaurants, and now there's so many. And they're kind of similar concepts to other big chains in Mexico. So all of that is part of the real estate industry, not just the building, but why we are building what we are building.
Yeah. And I also, I ran across the statistic that 10 to 12 million businesses will close every year. That's quite staggering. Like, especially like here in the Rio Grande Valley, you drive up and down the street here on 10th Street, and you see a ton of restaurants, a ton of businesses. And it's sad because some of them won't be here next year. I find that heartbreaking. So what I try to do is I try to educate business owners and tell them what's out there. They can get marketing and advertising and stuff like that. But what do you feel that business owners can do to like weather that storm?
Understanding their business cycle is very important.
So explain that.
Yes. So understanding when your money comes in, when it has to go out, what stays in and what stays out. Revenue is not the same as profit. And I think that's one of the biggest disconnects for especially small business owners, that $1 million in sales does not necessarily mean $1 million
in your pockets.
In your pocket.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think that one, understanding your audience and having a niche, you're not going to be a fit for everyone.
Yeah.
But you're going to be a fit, luckily, for someone. So finding that, having a plan, having projections, understanding your finances is huge. Okay. And that's one of the things I see business owners struggling the most with.
And that's more like because they have a dream and they want to pursue this and have a passion for this. So they don't get the
business, big picture,
bigger picture, the business part of it, which is interesting because, you know, you obviously want to have people succeed.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not the case.
That is not going to be the case for everyone. That's going to be the case for a few.
Yeah.
I wish everyone could succeed, but.
Yeah, it's entrepreneurship and business is hard.
Oh, yeah.
To say the least.
To say the least.
So let's talk about personal development. You obviously continue your personal development. Yes. Kind of touch on that because I feel like a lot of people don't or won't actually invest in themselves. Like for me, I was chatting with a buddy the other day and he's like, I feel bad. I got to buy this thing for the business. Like, don't ever feel bad for buying something for your business. If you're going to go out and buy like a $10,000 watch, then you should probably feel bad.
Yes.
Right. But if it's for your business, yes. Like don't feel bad. Like don't ever feel bad. So can you kind of touch on it? No, you're good.
Yes. So, I think the best investment you can make is in yourself. And by these, I mean your mind, what you know. We all have things that make us happy, right? So for me, what makes me happy is knowing more, learning more, reading books, put what I learn into action. But personal development is something that should be continuous. And that should be something that not to sit down every day and say, okay, what do I not know? But do not be afraid to not know something. Just know that everything that you don't know is more of an opportunity to learn something new.
Yeah.
So that's always how I tell whenever I'm assigned to a project or something that I'm like, at the beginning, I always thank my boss and say, thank you so much for letting me learn something new every day.
Okay.
Yes, and just be patient with yourself. And understand that mistakes are going to be made along the way. Like I tell people, I make mistakes every minute.
Yeah.
But that's how I learn. And those are the ones you remember. But like you said, never feel bad about investing in your business or investing in yourself and taking a bet on you. Because at the end, you are your best product and your best project.
Yeah, I feel like you can control where your life is going to go. And you can't control any outside stuff, but you can control what you do, how you do it, the decisions you make. And sometimes it's a little hard for people to take that route.
It is because, we all want instant gratification.
Yeah.
And I feel that social media shows like a like, you know, it's seconds. And it's like you said, instant gratification. But yeah. Dr. Davila would always tell me, if you do bad on a test, but you tell me, you can tell yourself, even if they would have given me an extra day, there's nothing else I could have done, then that's fine. You cannot control the outcome on many or almost all situations, but the only thing you can control is the effort that you put in. And as long as you can tell yourself, there's nothing else, even if they would have given me an extra day, an extra month, an extra year, then whatever happens, it happens. You can control it. You can control life. You can control anything but yourself, your reaction, your emotions, the way you treat others. Yeah.
Let me ask you a philosophical question here. How, and let me preface this.
Yeah.
So if I were to get a piece of paper and I got 1 to 100 years old, right? And now I'm 42, so I cut that piece off. That's gone. This is all I have left to do whatever I'm going to do. 42 to 65, I would say, I am going to be a player in the game. Yeah. After that, I might start slowing down. So I got maybe 23 years. Mm-hmm. How do you view time? How do you specifically view time that you have left?
I see it as an opportunity. I see it as a way to impact those around me, my community, and I always try every single day to make, and this might sound cheesy, but this is what I do every day. I do try to make the world a better place.
Why?
Because that's the only thing that people will remember. That's the only thing that you will remember at the end of the day.
Well, let me challenge you on this. When you pass away, mm-hmm. and far into the future, 200 years from now, you're forgotten. What do you think? Because, I'll tell you why I'm asking you this, because I heard somebody say this, and I thought he was a mentor, because he is a mentor, right?
Yeah.
And I was listening to him, and he was like, in 200 years from now, you're going to be forgotten, nobody's going to care, you're just going to be a blip in the radar, and then you're vanished. And that got me thinking, I was like, why? I hated hearing him say that. Like, it bothered me so much, But I was like, well, he's right. Like,
there's some element of right, I mean, of truth to that. But who cares about what's going to happen in 200 years? I care what's going to happen tomorrow, next month, next year. And I do know, and this might sound presumptuous, but I do know that if I was to die tomorrow, the people I've interacted with would know that at least on my end, I always try to do the right things and I try to help as much as I could. Mm-hmm. And yes, you have to be realistic. I'm a very, believe me. And believe me, those close to me know that I can be very objective regardless of whoever is on the other end of the table. I can be extremely objective. But also, because like I mentioned, I've been through so much hardship, I'm trying to leave a positive mark in the world, because the world is already a very...
Yeah, I get you.
yeah, a very crazy, crazy place. So I don't care if they're going... Honestly, I don't care. I don't care if they're going to... I don't care what people... Honest truth, what people would think about me, or if they would even think about me in 200 years. But like I told you, I'm at peace.
Yeah.
And that comes from knowing that I've done the right things. Like someone told me, bad things also happen to good people, and good things happen to bad people. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that. But I've never met someone that does bad things or evil things and can sleep at night peacefully. Yeah. So there's that. Yeah. But I don't think that everything's going to be going good in my life just because I'm a good person. No, absolutely not.
Yeah. Life will have its challenges.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But how I see it is that I'm an orange. And if they squeeze me very, very hard, what should come out of me is orange juice. Not apple juice, not pear juice, not prune juice. Orange juice. So I had to stay true to myself, my values, my ethics, and my morals, regardless of the situation. And if you can do that, then I think you're on the other side.
Yeah, that's great advice, because I had to go and back, and I was like, man, why did it bother me so much? And I was like, you know what, forget that. Like, I only have this amount of time left, so I'm going to have a positive impact and do whatever I possibly can to be able to make this place better while I'm here.
I'm not saying be a people pleaser.
Right.
And have boundaries, absolutely. But if it's within you to do something good, then it can be as simple as buying cookies for the Girl Scout. That's, yeah. I mean, something, little things that,
little things.
That
little,
we don't
little
realize.
Little things add up, yeah.
Yeah.
And you're right. So before we finish off the podcast, in all your cumulative years of living on this earth and your professional life, what's the best piece of advice you can give people?
It's not that deep. That is the best. It's not that deep. Nothing, good or bad, is not forever. Mistakes are not forever. They don't define you. So learn how little you are in this big world and don't take anything personal. And then your life, there is this book called I read it in Spanish, Los Cuatro Acuerdos, and actually my therapist recommended, yeah. Yeah, the four amends.
Agreements.
Agreements, there you go, yes. And the first one is do not take anything personal.
Yeah.
And I think the second that you realize that people's reactions are more about themselves than you, or what people think about you is none of your business. And that who cares? It's not that deep. I mean, life is so short. We love to think that we feel that 5 years are so far away, right? And then
yeah,
you blink and they... And they're like this, so just don't take anything good or bad. Don't take your wins too serious. Don't take your losses too serious. Make fun of yourself. I tell people, I used to think life was a big, big game, and I still think life is a big, big game. Where you go up, you go down, you go up, you go down.
Yeah. And then one day you're gone.
And then one day you're gone and no one will remember you.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's all good. And so, it happens.
Before we finish all the podcast, let everybody know where they can find you and how they can use your services.
Yes. So again, I'm a commercial lender for Vantage Bank. So my office is located on 2nd and Ridge across the DoubleTree. You can find me on LinkedIn as Fabiola Urgel Caporuso, and on Instagram also as Fabiola Urgel Caporuso. Caporuso, and on Facebook as Fabiola Orgel Caporuso. Orgel is my maiden name, Caporuso is my married last name. So if I can be of any service or I can answer any questions, I'm always, I love to connect with people and meet new people every day. So.
Awesome. It was great having you on the podcast.
Thank you. Hope
we'll see
I did
you guys
good.
Later. Absolutely. Thank you. Bye.
Awesome.
Perfect. 54 minutes.